These are the boys are called, and you're listening to Monday Night Blah. What is it?
Monday Night Talk.
Oh.
On WATD.
In WATD.
Welcome back to
Monday Night Talk. And we want to thank State Representative Tom Calter for joining us for a few moments for the State House report. And we shift gears. And we talk a little bit about, last week we talked about the gas tax. I think we did that extensively with the state senator, Bob Hedlund, who you just heard in that little clip. This week we're shifting gears. And I want to thank one of our guests who's here with us, who kind of had reached out to me a couple of weeks and said, this would be a really good subject to talk about. Folks probably don't understand it that well until they get involved with this particular area. And that's Paula Harris, who's joining us, and she is the immediate past chair of the South Shore Chamber. Hi, Paula. How are you?
I'm great, Kevin. How are you?
I'm pretty good. And with her in studio, we have Rob Lynch. And Rob is not only a partner, but he is a CPA with MLB CPA. And he's here with us to talk as well. I believe on the line or joining us will be Chris Anderson. Is Chris on the line, Larry? He is. Chris, are you there?
I'm on the line, Kevin. Thanks.
Excellent. And, of course, Chris is the president of the Massachusetts High Technology Council. Chris, how are you?
Terrific. What a great show you've got tonight.
Well, so far, so good. You never know. Sometimes things can go a little haywire. Especially when it depends on what the topic is. And now, are we expecting, do we have David Snell also? This is kind of like a little bit of a roundtable. David, are you there?
Yes, I am here, Kevin. Thank you very much.
And David, of course, is with American Computer Technologies, and he does some work here for us at WATD. Now, I thought it was important to have all of us here to kind of talk about this little sneaky tax. And folks that really know, you know, I've had a chance every week. We have somebody from Beacon Hill who sits and talks with us, whether it's Josh Cutler, whether it's State Senator Bob Hedlund, whether it's Jeff Deal, you know, it doesn't matter. But we knew that there's something like this was coming. But from what I had understood, nobody knew what it was. It had to be kind of deciphered by the Department of Revenue. And I don't know if, Paul, if you could to start things out, give me your thoughts on this when you initially heard about this.
Sure. excuse me. The South Shore Chamber has these local business councils, and we had one. The Marshfield, Pembroke, Duxbury Business Council got together just 2 or 3 days before the vote, actually. And I had started to hear about it when I reached out to you. And we had Representative Cutler come in and talk about it. And so I had asked about it because, you know, being involved with the chamber, to be honest with you, I didn't know about it. And, you know, I'm a volunteer member, so it's not my day-to-day job. I have my own company. But when we started asking questions, there were very little answers, and it was quite clear that the legislature didn't know what they were passing. And it really made me nervous, because when you think about software, it touches, and computers, they touch every aspect of everybody's business. We have an investment management financial planning business, and we use software to manage money, to create plans, and it's, you start thinking about, are these going to be taxed? You know, how do you reuse them? And I started Facebooking about it with other friends who use software in their business, and it got people kind of nervous.
Now, David, I know you're out on vacation, so we won't keep you that long. But I want, being somebody who operates American Computer Technologies, when you first heard about this, what was the first concern that you had?
We were as confused as everyone else, and in many cases, we still are. Personally, I called around to dozens of computer service providers, both large and small, on the South Shore last Friday, a week into this tax being enacted. And nobody at all, not one single instance, knew they had to charge sales tax for service of installing software. So it's still it's a law that's not known by many people, and many businesses and consumers are going to find out about this the first time they get a bill for having something done.
And is that something that you end up having somebody come back and go, you know, why are you doing this? Is it a matter of that you're going to have to do a little bit of damage control and let folks know that this is what's coming?
Exactly. We've had to be proactive because we knew this was coming and we notified all of our clients. But we still don't have the guidance that we need to make the correct decisions as to how to tax our clients moving forward. Now, we have some basic FAQs from the Department of Revenue and that kind of stuff, and the law itself, but there's still a lot of gray areas that people aren't sure of and that are going to cause problems when people go to file, or businesses go to file their sales tax in September. That will take effect, obviously, July 31st sales as well as the month of August. People are going to be surprised when they see that new entry line up there saying for sales and use tax for software installation and configuration.
Well, as I said, we have Rob Lynch here, who is with MLB CPA. Give me your thoughts on this.
Well, thank you, Kevin. We're getting a lot of calls from our clients, and I did, when it was proposed, I did read about the tax, and I thought, no way is this going to pass. It's a dangerous tax. It's now taxing services, and as you called it, the sneaky tax.
Mm.
I think, as Paula alluded to, I think it was in the bill. I don't know how many of the legislatures knew what was there. There's a lot of ambiguity in the law, and you know, not only the question and answers, there's just a lot of questions that are open, and people don't know what to do.
And I guess I turn my attention to you, Chris, is from what I understand is that there is something in the works as far as putting something on the ballot next year. Is that true?
That's right, Kevin. First of all, I think everybody knows, Paula, you know, would verify this from her perspective as well. But, you know, we have the most technology-intensive state in the United States. We have more technology clusters that are established than any other state. And for the legislature, actually the governor first proposed, the legislature narrowed it down a bit, to impose a tax on the heart of the technology economy is astounding. And you know, I can understand why a number of businesses were caught by surprise, but we here at the High Tech Council have been extremely actively engaged in raising the level of increasing concern with legislative leaders and rank-and-file members, and not once, because there was no public hearing on any of this legislation, was there any serious outreach or attempt to work with us to understand the impact. Unfortunately, when the law went into effect on July 31st, a number of people were just hearing about this new obligation for the first time.
Right.
Now, implementing it effectively is the last thing on our priority list. The first thing on our priority list is to repeal this law that will do untold damage to our state's competitiveness and to the ability for small and mid-sized companies in particular to win jobs, win business, and keep and expand their job and employee base here.
Have you heard any feedback from any of the business leaders in and around the state in regards to this? What are some of the things that they're saying to you, Chris, and to your council?
Well, it's very similar to what we've just been hearing bandied about on the show here. There's A, confusion, B, concern about whether or not they're going to be able to keep their workforce intact in order to be competitive. But most of them are basically saying, look, what can we do to help you repeal this tax? I haven't heard a state legislator, well, with the exception of a few of them, put economic growth and job creation as one of their priorities. You just had Representative Calder talk about three of his priorities.
Yep.
None of them related to creating jobs. We're great at figuring out how to spend the money. What we have to worry about now is eliminating a barrier that's going to hurt our competitiveness, which will have an impact on job growth.
Now, according to a recent Boston Globe article, this tax is supposed to be able to yield $160 million. I'm going to throw it back to Dave real quick. Other than stuff like software, what if somebody wanted to build a website? Would that tax apply to that too, Dave?
Well, according to the guidance that we have right now, that if you're hiring a third party to design a website with software that's already been pre-made, they're not doing the programming, then that service will be taxed as well as updates of that website.
Mm. Wow. What do you think, Paul? What do you think, Rob? Give me your thoughts.
The options that you have, as I said, I'm getting a lot of questions from my clients, and you know, I would encourage people to call with questions, to call their professionals, their accountants, their lawyers. If they're a little more complex, you can send informal comments and suggestions to the Mass DOR, or as Chris suggested, you know, come together and present the Mass DOR with the proposed regulations, or repeal the tax. And then you could also get an individual letter ruling from the Mass DUR as well.
As it is, it's tough owning a business. And in your job, Rob, I mean, I'm sure things that a business, you know, you got to keep good files. There are things that you can and cannot write off. And I'm sure that this tax is one of them that you can't simply write off because it's something that's going right to the government. But it's something that you have to charge a customer.
Well, it's something, and the customer that pays it, if it's business related, that certainly would be a deductible fee, but right. It's additional costs, and here we are trying to recover from the economy, and it's another tax that people have to pay.
Mm. So, Kevin, this is another interesting point. None of the states with whom Massachusetts competes with for technology talent and technology companies that serve our entire economy have any kind of a tax like this. We have the broadest application of the tax directed at the heart of our innovation economy. And what's interesting is that just north of you in the major city of Boston, there's a mayoral race going on. A majority of those candidates are joining in for the call to repeal this tax. This is how important it is to recognize that from a competitive standpoint, we really need to be focused on helping the legislature understand, even if they voted for this thing without the benefit of a hearing, that this is affecting a lot of different businesses within their district, retail, healthcare, in addition to the tech sector. And this is going to be very, very pervasive. And I think we'll recall 1990 when the legislature at that time imposed a broad and sweeping expansion of the sales tax only to within a relatively short period of time, repeal about 90% of that expansion.
I guess, you know, when I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking about it in someone like me that doesn't use really software too often for work. Mm. I do use it, you know, I'm out on the road mostly. I'm in sales. But I'm thinking about this from the standpoint of someone that, say, does their taxes online with software either on their computer or online. Would this tax be applicable to someone that has a service done like that, or would that be more of the company that would pay the tax for the service? Hmm. I'm trying to figure out where, from a day-to-day, you know, user standpoint, if this tax would affect them for services such as that.
Based upon the guidance that is out there now, if you're purchasing some tax software or a license to use, that would be taxable. Mm. But as we purchase tax software, so we're going to be paying tax on that or any modification, so the tax was already there on the software. But any services related to modifying that, but us preparing a tax return, the service to prepare the tax return is no, there's no additional tax on that.
Okay. Dave, anything last from you, Dave, before we let you go?
Well, the other one, you know, we're talking about that tax software. We have many accountants who are on our ProWatch modeling. We do a lot of work for them installing and configuring their tax software. So that's going to be another sales tax that accountants are going to have to pay for when they have software updated on their systems. And the same, you, Kevin, if you're buying an antivirus software that needs to be updated once a year,
yep,
you'll be paying the software sales tax itself. And then if you have someone come in and install it or update it for you, you'll be paying the tax on that installation charge. This is very far-reaching in how software is installed and used computer systems for both consumers and businesses.
And does it complicate your job any further? Does it just make it harder as far as for you to do business? Because folks are like, what do I do? You know,
yeah,
as far
my
as
job
financial
business in my business. Because let's say, for instance, you've got a technician on site that's diagnosing a problem with a network. That part of the service call is currently not taxable. Mm. But if he has to make a software or network configuration change, that portion of the visit is taxable. So are we going to be breaking down the sales tax roll by where I spend 17 minutes doing configurations? I was 23 and a half minutes doing this. Now, this is going to be a monster for many small businesses to try to manage.
Right. And, Kevin, I would say there's two costs to this. There's the actual sales tax, but then there's the soft cost of lost revenue. So you've got someone like Dave who's trying to run his business every day, who's now spending a tremendous amount of hours on non-revenue generating activities, just trying to figure out what the heck to do with this. And he can't go out and service his clients. He can't go out and bring in additional clients because he's trying to comply with a law that nobody understands. And the reverberation of that is going to be huge because this is hitting large companies. You know, there's an article in the Boston Business Journal where Tufts is quoted, but it's also coming down to the solopreneurs, the one in two people shops, and that's where, you know, they don't have the bandwidth. They don't. They have razor thin margins to begin with, to start absorbing taxes and having to pass this on, and the administrative burden on them is huge.
And this is also almost like a stimulus package for New Hampshire, Vermont, right, Rhode Island, states surrounding us. Correct.
Right.
Perfect.
Correct.
What do you think, Chris?
Well, there, as I mentioned, we've got 15 states that we've identified as our peer states, and only Texas, which is a sales tax-based economy, imposes this tax. So this was a tactical error on the part of the legislature to do this. You're going to hear a lot of stories about the impossible burden for compliance. Paul is absolutely right, though. The lost revenue impact here is going to be huge. What a drain away from the creative work of a lot of small businesses to try to have to figure out how to comply legally with the Department of Revenue's tangled regulations. So, you know, we really believe that when we filed the question to place the repeal of this tax on the 2014 ballot, it was going to galvanize and focus the attention of many of the small businesses and many of the legislators who sort of just went along with leadership and accepted what was in this package. We hope it gets revisited, but if it doesn't, we're going to stand up and advocate for these small businesses and fight the repeal of this law all the way to November of 2014.
I have to ask a follow-up question, Chris, and that is, we've been, you know, I've been, you know, looking at the news. This one particular petition is one of 33 that are being put forth for next year's ballot. Do you feel that this one has a chance?
You know, Kevin, I have, next year it'll be 30 years that I've spent time at the High Tech Council. I've been through more than a half a dozen ballot campaigns to respond to either a negative policy that the legislature imposed or when they didn't act when they should have. When the High Tech Council gets involved in an issue, it will be moved through to completion. So this one will make it. A lot of these 33 ballot questions, they've been filed. Some of them may be thrown out by the Attorney General. A number of others won't meet the initial threshold of 70,000 certified signatures this fall. So that number will likely get winnowed down. But this particular question, absent the legislature's ability to go out and repeal this thing prior to November of 2014, will result in a successful ballot campaign, putting it on the ballot as a question.
You know, when I think about this tax, I think about the massive Adobe software building that sits on 128, and I think about all the tech and all the software manufacturers, the big guys that sit on the what was called the tech highway back when it was developed, was the 128 corridor. Mm. Do you feel like here in Massachusetts that you'll have the support of some of these giants that come out behind getting rid of this tax, especially because it'll affect, you know, purchases that are made?
Who are you pointing the question to?
Anyone that involved in this.
Rob, go first.
Well, I think, yes, that you're going to have that support. I mean, I think a lot of people's eyes were opened up when this tax became effective. It caught a lot of people sleeping, but it has a lot of support to overturn it. I mean, that you're just seeing the talk, and it's the hot topic these days.
Paula?
I would agree. You know, it's interesting. We had a chamber board meeting, actually, the day of the vote, and Rep. Cantwell had been at our board meeting, and he said, I have to leave. I have to get up to Beacon Hill to vote. And I said, vote no on the computer tax. And he said, well, we've already got language to amend it. I said, that's a pretty scary place to go when you are passing a tax that day and you've already got language to amend it. That's a little scary to me.
Yeah, I'm not sure it was amended, but I think the point is that technology jobs are among the most mobile jobs throughout the economy. The teaching hospitals, research universities, those anchors, they're not going anywhere. A lot of them contribute to generating the front end of new innovative technologies. But the jobs themselves that are produced in the tech sector are extremely mobile. And whether you're a small business near a border, a state border that doesn't have to impose this, or a large employer, you can bet that the continuing evaluation of the business climate in Massachusetts from a cost perspective, as well as whether or not there's a perception that there's a partnership between elected officials and job creators, will have an impact. And you'll see those tech jobs becoming even more mobile, unfortunately, towards states that have a more positive, supportive, pro-business environment.
Dave, are you still with us?
I am. You know, just to take up on that,
please.
What they're doing with this tax, they're actually taxing a skill set here in Massachusetts. You're not taxing a product. So taking that skill set is going to discourage future job creation in the industry and in the Commonwealth. You need to think about it as consumers, whether you're a business or a home consumers of services. Is this going to eventually, or this will probably eventually extend to accountants, plumbers, carpenters, electricians, people who provide services to the end user? They may be subject to these same types of taxes in the future. If this works out, why would they not open it up to that?
It's a good, definitely a good point. I think it's kind of a bold move. We get some big races next year, big, and one of them for governor. I think it's a bold move, and I'm sure that Chris had mentioned 1990 when we saw some of the taxes that were put in place. I believe that there were a lot of seats that were changing as well that same year, not only in the state senate but also in the House of Representatives because of such taxes. Am I wrong here?
Oh, I think
well,
you're
actually,
right.
That was the year Bill Weld got elected, and that for the next 2 years there were enough Republican senators to sustain a a gubernatorial veto, and there were a wave of House and Senate seats that shifted. It may be that we're in an environment like this if the question continues to roll all the way to November.
Just want to give everybody a kind of a chance to promote what it is that they do. I want to thank Paula and Rob Lynch, as well as Chris Anderson and Dave Snell. Dave, if folks want to find out more about what you do over at American Computer Technologies, how can they
do that? Sure, they can go to our website, which is goamerican.com. I also have a blog there where we blogged about this tax and have links to many of the official words and bills there. So people who want to learn more about it, aside from what we've all just talked about, they can go there and get to the MassDOR and the rest of the websites.
Rob, if folks want to find out more as far as for tax purposes?
Our website is mlbcpa.net, and they can get all the contact information there. And we have offices in Norwell, Brewster, and Natick.
Chris, if somebody wants to get on, you know, if they want to help out with this movement as far as the petition, or they want to find out more as what the council does, how can they do that?
Yeah, the Mass High Tech Council website, mhtc.org. It has a special feature on the homepage. You can click there, find out the history of this particular tax, and who to contact. Ron Trisnadal in our office would be more than happy to work with you to pull you onto the team.
Where does the petition stand at this particular time that you're gathering signatures to put this on the ballot, and what would be the next step?
So the Attorney General is still doing a review of the questions. We'll be fine there. In September, the petitions will be off certified. And we'll have to go out and collect over 70,000 certified votes. We'll do a lot more than that. We have through the fall, and then after that, the legislature will get the question, assuming we get the number of signatures needed. They'll have a hearing on it in the late winter, assuming they don't enact it. Then we'll collect a few more signatures in the summer, and it'll be placed on the ballot in November.
Paula, you want to say anything in closing?
Sure. I think... I'll say one, we deal with small businesses every day. Our firm is WH Cornerstone Investments, and we will see the impact for them. But this is why it's important for people to get involved in things like local chambers and their councils for their industry, because that's where you get some information, and that's where people can band together. And the average citizen needs to just kind of stay on top of this. And I think what we're seeing here, too, are the effects of having one party sort of rule in Massachusetts. You know, checks and balances are meant to have
a
multiple
bit of a complacency,
parties.
Maybe?
I think there is.
Maybe we should all get together, maybe 5 to 6 weeks, sit down. Do we want Chris and Dave, as well as Rob and Paula, and maybe if this thing has moved to another level, maybe we could talk further?
Absolutely,
good idea.
Sure.
Dave,
sounds
I'll
good.
Go for it.
Okay. We will definitely revisit this topic, I promise you. We will step aside and want to thank everybody for all of you for being on, Chris and Dave, as well as Rob and Paula. When we come back, we'll speak with Arnold Greenblatt. He is running for mayor in Brockton. Stay tuned.
Thanks.